So let's talk about this tour, a European leg of the Underworld Tour. That's the 8th or 9th show of this tour.
Something like that. That sounds right.
How does it go so far?
It's been good. You know, it's I mean, the first week was a lot of traveling because we flew into Germany, and then we had to get our gear, and then we went up to the UK, and then it was just like a lot of back and forth kind of stuff. But no, now we're like in the groove. Things are going good, and yeah, man, solid. You know, the shows have been really, really good. Yeah, it's been really good.
All right. Let's talk about what happened a few months ago. You should have played in the Bataclan, the first venue. There was some tragic events from that. One way or the other, did you follow what happened from New Jersey and during a show, your American band?
Yeah.
What was the impact overseas?
And usually, like, you know, I'm not really a news political guy, but like this, now, because this affects us, you know, obviously. So yeah, I was following it, and you know, it's terrible, man, when this shit happens, and you know, you start thinking, it's like, oh, is it gonna be okay? And you know, but seeing it go down, and then you know, they got the guys right, and I'll be honest, I saw there was something with I think the French president guy,
yeah, mm-hmm.
And he said, and I thought this was fucking cool as hell. He said something about, you don't destroy France. France will destroy you. It's something along, I don't know if the translation was right.
Yeah. Something
and then,
like that.
And then you went after and you got these guys. And so, yeah, man, I mean.
But one way or the other, could you, that kind of, it happened, we've heard about the story of Dimebag Darrell was shot during a show. One way or the other, when you start a show, could you, that idea could cross your mind? That you're putting your life in danger by just...
It wasn't gonna until you just brought it up, so now... No, I mean, now, sometimes, you know, me personally, I'm not thinking about it, you know, all the time, but I'm aware, maybe more aware, like, okay, where's the exits and, you know, that kind of thing. You know, you are a little bit heightened, your senses a little bit. But, yeah, man, I mean, you still have to do what you have to do, you know, but just maybe being a little bit more aware of your surroundings and those kind of things.
And because we could think, and it's maybe my view from France, that living in a country where everybody's not everybody, a lot of people carrying guns.
Where, here?
No, in the US. You could be more sensitive to the fact that... when you're in a public place, could be university, everything, something might happen. And we can hear a few times a year where crazy guy shot people in a university or on a campus. So doesn't that make you especially more sensitive to the fact that when you're in public, things might happen? You remain like all of us, maybe, and excuse my word, naive about what could happen?
I don't know, naive, and I mean, and as far as like guns, I mean, I don't have guns, but it's like I said, man, I think just, I'm personally, for me personally, I'm just like, yeah, a little more aware of these things, that's all.
Alright.
But you can't, you know, you can't friggin'...
But the worth would be to stop doing what we all love?
Yeah, man, that's
because
what I'm saying.
Because of these
guys. Yeah, you can't just friggin' not do nothing, you know, I mean, yeah, you have to maybe, like, if it was something really big was happening, and it's like, okay, well, maybe it's let everything settle down. But, like, a day-to-day thing, it's like, yeah, man, I mean, you know, there's crazy people out there. Shit, they're going to do what they're going to do. And you just got to forge on, you know?
Right.
But, like I said, man, being aware of certain things, you know, that's really all you can do.
True. So last year, at the end of last year, you were also on tour with the Underworld Tour in North America with Overkill.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, how does it happen? And especially with this playing with Overkill, which audience might be different from your audience. Sometimes you were leading band, sometimes they were leading band, for what I understood. You split the things. did you worry one way or the other how their audience will react to your music and so on the opposite?
I mean, the whole thing went down because we've known those guys for years and years. We rehearsed at their place. Didi, you know, has a rehearsal place. So we were there for since, like, I don't know, 98. We've been there since the beginning of the band. So we've known these guys for 20-something years almost. And we always talked about it. You know, it'll be cool if we went out. It would be kind of, it'd be fun. Yeah, the audience might be a little different, but it could be cool. And then it just so happened we were just done with this record and they had some time and it's like, well, let's try to do it. So we did it, and yeah, I mean, the crowd's a little different, but it wasn't bad. You know, I think I think it was pretty
I think some
yeah, I think some of their fans, you know, maybe going in, it's like, oh, they're a prog kind of band, and oh, it's not going to be heavy or something. But no, I mean, we got, you know, we could throw down some riffs, and
yeah.
And I think a lot of their fans saw that, and they're like, all right.
But, did you, one way or the other, modify the setlist to sound heavier or to take the toughest songs of your repertoire?
That's hard. I don't know if we actually really did that. I'm trying to think if we really thought about it.
Unconsciously, that. Maybe.
Well, I know we were talking about doing the whole record there. And since it was a co-headliner, and we would open one night, and they would open, this back and forth thing, we decided not to do the whole record there. Because it just, you know, it just didn't seem right. We wanted to, till it was our own headlining show, to be able to do the new record. But yeah, I mean, we still play like Without You and a couple ballady kind of things. And yeah, there was a lot of heavy stuff too. So I don't think we really, it's not like we really catered, but yeah, maybe we really did. I think we just kind of came up with a good set that felt was, you know, definitely some heavy stuff, and it just felt good, and I was like, okay, this will be okay. You know, we didn't, like, not do any, you know, like, we did Without You, we did that kind of stuff. So, we pretty much did our thing, but I'm sure there was some heavy stuff in there.
From our point of view in Europe, or my point of view, I would say, in the beginning of the band, your fame tried to rise in Japan, in Europe, and it took much longer to have some sort of recognition in your home country. You will tell me if you agree with that.
Mm,
right,
yes.
Now, is that kind of a relief or a new excitement to be able to get also to be tour and success in your home country? Or you didn't care that much?
Man.
Or success is not the right word, I don't know.
I mean, the more places that we can do well, I mean, the better, you know. But yeah, I mean, I remember in the past I was really not doing anything in the States. It's like, oh, that kind of sucks, but we could always come here. We felt welcome in South America, and we felt like people liked what we did, and we were cool with that. So yeah, I mean, in the States it was slow going, and you know, now we do okay there. So yeah, I mean, it just worked out, and that's, I'm, you know, we're cool with that. But if it didn't, or some certain place maybe doesn't like what we do, or yeah, whatever. You know, as long as there's some people that like what we do, we're happy, man. You know.
All right. So let's talk. Let's come back to Underworld. I might be naive, but I have the feeling that when a whole chapter is over, a band is kind of gathering together and talk and chatting and brainstorming about what would be next for them. What would be their, what direction they want to go. Is it true for Symphonix?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's true, what was your then your main ideas you wanted to emphasize for what will become Underworld?
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, every, at least the last, maybe, well, most of the records have been like that, but the last four or five really about talking about what the music kind of direction, the theme of the lyric and the music too. Yeah, and that helps a lot. So we'll do that. We'll do the whole previous album in the touring cycle, and We won't write during that. I can't write on the bus. It's just impossible. And then once that's done, we'll get home and we'll kind of break down and chill out for a little bit. And then we'll start talking about what we wanted to do. And with this record, it was, we had talked about maybe a mix of everything we've done. Some of the heavier stuff, some of the more melodic, some of the progressive, a little bit of everything. And we just talked about the flow of the record, and we were talking about the idea of this, the underworld, Orpheus in underworld, trying to find some kind of a story thing, the Dante Inferno. I mean, I love all that stuff. So, and it seemed like a good idea too, because it's like, okay, so you have, you know, this guy, and he's going to go, you know, save his love from hell, and so you can have all this dark, the heavy kind of songs, and they're a little more on the dark side, but then you can have a ballady kind of thing, and it's very emotional, so that would lend itself to, you know, different kinds of, you know, some of the heavy stuff, some of the more melodic, and it worked out. And I think too, the big thing for me was wanting it to be like an album that, I mean, every album we do, we try to make every song good, but this one especially, just about just really being able to sit and listen to the whole thing, and everything flowed, everything felt right. Because I had seen a bunch of interviews, I've seen some documentaries just about the music business, talking to people in the industry and friends, and everybody, you know, it's tough in the music business now. And this one documentary they were talking about, a lot of bands just doing singles, and that's probably more in the pop world, but still, you know, concentrating on one song and having an album of just filler shit on there. And they were saying there was never going to be like another Dark Side of the Moon or Sgt. Pepper. They were naming all these great albums that were just great pieces of work. And they said, you know, now with the internet and people's attention, and, you know, bands just trying to have a one song, and there's never going to be any more good records, albums as a whole. And I was like, fuck, man, that ain't cool. So, that was on my mind. It's like, let's just really, from the beginning to end, have this thing feel like a record, feel like a flow, musically cohesive, so that you could sit and listen to the whole thing, and it just kind of made sense, and it just felt like, you know, there was some kind of a vibe to it.
But I suppose when you've got this conversation with the other guy saying where we want to go, you already have bits and pieces of, like, small parts of songs, patchwork of songs?
Not really. I think we talked about that pretty early. You know, pretty early on. I mean, I might have had a couple riffs, maybe, but I think once that idea's there, then it's easier to write, because you kind of know what you need to say. You know, you kind of know what you need to do.
Because it's very different, I think, to start to work on an album that will be at the end. The Odyssey, or the other, would be Five Methodist Institute, where it's very different in terms of how you work with it.
Yeah.
So, with the idea and the common agreement you have in mind, you can start to kind of come in your back in your den and work to see how your creativity will go.
And you have that direction. Yeah, so you're just kind of filling in the pieces. You know, you kind of know what you want the end thing to be, so now you just have to work to get there.
And in general, do you compose a lot and then you reshuffle a fresh part of it, or you kind of maybe, for I don't know, if you want 9 songs, you will work on 9 songs and not an extra one, or do you keep extras from each session, or you at some point you decide that if the song is good enough or reach your standards and you continue, or you trash? How do you work, creatively speaking?
Well, there's really never anything left over. That's a good. How do I really do this?
Or do you have an iPhone where you have hundreds of small ideas, riffs, melodies?
It's your
treasure box where you've got everything.
I mean, I do have some stuff, and there is like a big folder of ideas from all the. But usually, it just when I go back and listen, it's just like, this isn't right. None of this shit's right. Because it's a different time. So, yeah, I mean, we'll talk about this idea, and then I'll just start trying to come up with some riffs and some ideas, And, you know, after a while, it's like, okay, kind of have a sound, a direction, then start working them. It's like, okay, this is really good for, you know, maybe lyrically we might have had something, oh, we'll have maybe the Charon song, and it'll be that kind of thing, or there'll be some kind of a ballad idea where the guy's a little more big emotional soaring chorus, and then I'll just start putting the songs together, you know, piece by piece, and you know, and then like I'll come down the next day, and if it just it's like, oh, that ain't good, maybe all right, so fuck that, scratch that one, or try to be like, well, maybe if I rearrange something, but just try to get. I mean, once the idea, I mean, it does go pretty smooth. Once that idea is there, it does go kind of not fast, but it does go smooth at a good pace.
All right. If we talk about the cover artwork or the artwork in general, this one it was still now for 3 or 4 records you're collaborating with Warren Flanagan.
Yeah, Warren. Yeah.
In general, with him or in general, even for previous album, how do you work with the cover artist? You give him a very strict and detailed idea of what you want. Just give me, I don't know, title and. And then his creativity will then it will give you some drafts to choose from. How do you work in general?
It's easy because there's really no big conversation. Like he's really creative, so you know I'll call him and I'll be like, well, you know, and maybe I'll have a plan. It's like, oh, I'll tell him this, that, and the other thing. But I'll tell him the name of the record. And like the kind of thing we're going for, and then he's already got probably 1,000 ideas in his head. You know, with this one, it was like, you know, I think I said it's like, yeah, we're gonna go with this Dante's Inferno, this Orpheus in the underworld, and that kind of thing, and the boat guy, and you know, hell and back kind of thing. And there might have been some song titles at that point. Yeah, there definitely was song titles. So I just kind of give him that, and that's it. That's his thing. I mean, he's a artist guy, you know, so it's like, yeah,
he's providing you different drafts, different ideas, and then you which one you between which you choose from, or for in the world, he came with this one, and
that was it. It's like, here it is. It's like, okay, right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, usually it's just everything's like really where it should be. That's why we like Warren, and just like the whole camp, all the guys. It's like everything, like, I think now everybody kind of knows. You know, like the guys will talk about the thing, they'll let me go write, but they know that I know what we talked about, so it's like there's that trust there. And the same with Warren. It's like, yeah, we're doing this underworld thing, you know, with the boat guy and the big hellish thing. And he's like, okay. You know, and then a couple weeks later, he'll fire off some things, and they're all like right on point, pretty much, you know. All the records have been like that.
After that, I suppose it's a question of you will ask 10 different people, they will have 10 different opinions, but I have to say, I was pretty disappointed by Iconoclast. I find really...
The artwork or the music?
No, the artwork. Music, always fine. Yeah, because it was kind of dark, too, I don't know, Matrix style, but...
But that was exactly
brownish.
It.
Brownish.
Yeah, but that was exactly it, you know? Because I said, we're doing this man and machine thing, and he's like, oh, like the Matrix. I'm like, yeah, sure. And
that's why I prefer the Digipack, your Digibook, where you have these two faces, which is good because on the crystal you have this character which is plugged to. I don't like that, but after that, obviously, it's a question of.
But yeah, I mean, that's what it was.
It's exactly what you wanted, what you wanted.
Yep. And that phone conversation was the same. I mean. It was the same thing, and the same thing with the music. I mean, we talked about, yeah, how about this man and machine and something a little different, something a little less organic, you know. I mean, there's a lot of this mythological kind of stuff that we do, and you know, these big tales and that stuff, and it was like, yeah, let's just try something a little different, a little futuristic, maybe modern, this kind of machine thing. And yeah, I mean, the music, it's all different. I mean, you have to always make it different. You're doing the same shit over and over is too much, but yeah. But even the music on Iconoclast, it is more abrasive and it's
yeah, no, sure.
So but, yeah, it all has to be what it is, you know. It's always got to be a little different.
Okay. So for this new record, for Underworld, you released lyrics videos. No, I would say raw with videos. Why? That's too expensive, or not? Doesn't worth it anymore to invest heavily in a top video with the.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is money thing, but we were trying to do something. We were talking about trying to do something a little different, a little bigger than that. And like I said, it's just tough in the business now. I mean, it's tough for bands. It's just tough for everybody with money. So, I mean, we're still talking about some things that we could do. But I mean, the lyric video, it's like a lot of bands are doing it. It's like, well, okay, just to get this music out there. It's cool. I mean, you know, obviously, yeah, sure, we'd love to do something, you know.
Well, for say the World of Five, I remember it was like all green screen thing. So maybe it seems not to be that fun on your point of view, because you're doing the same thing in front of nothing.
Yeah.
And you can be happy at the end when you see the final result, but it might be a pain to do. Now the YouTube generation doesn't care. I'm not sure it doesn't care that much. You know, more VH1 or MTV or no one cares.
Yeah, yeah.
So for you, on a promotion level, it's not that important anymore. Especially reaching the level you reach where you're known by most of the metal community.
Yeah, I mean, any promotional stuff like that's good to have, you know. And they suggested the lyric video, and it's like, well, okay, that's kind of cool. And like I said, we were talking about trying to do something kind of cooler, something bigger, and something more expensive. And then once it becomes more expensive, that's where the problems start to arise. So.
All right. So if we take a little distance from the band, the lineup of the band is remarkably stable for like 15 or 16 years. Where at the beginning it was kind of shaky sometimes. The only easy explanation I have is that you have to be called Michael to stay in the band. Why? Is there any kind of reason that at the beginning it was difficult and now you reached the normal speed of the band? At some point of maturity or different the events of life?
Yeah, I mean, I think just sometimes, you know, early on maybe some guys, this isn't for them, this kind of thing. And but I mean, there's only, you know, a couple times, a couple guys here and there. But, yeah, I mean, we've been the same since, shit, I don't know, 2000 maybe?
Yeah, and there were a lot of opportunities to have issues. Michael Pinella having an issue with one of his finger, Michael Lapone being sick, Jason also. So you could have a lot of opportunities if you wanted one way or the other to change the band. And even with such difficulties, and you have to face the reality of life and someone being sick and not being able to play anymore, you're still there.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like, you know, after that so long, it's like, yeah, it is kind of a family thing. And, you know, I mean, we're all doing this. We all know what we're getting ourselves into. And it's like, nothing's ever perfect. And being a musician now is just so tough. So, yeah, we all know that, so we just kind of stick together and try to make the best of it, and, you know, and just that we've been around each other for so long, everybody knows, you know, if someone's pissed off, you know, maybe give them their space, or
you know how to manage.
You can tell, yeah, man, I mean, I kind of know everybody's thing, so sometimes I'll be like the psychiatrist guy, just trying to make sure.
Right.
No, but everybody's cool, man. You know, there's never really no issues. And like I said, it's hard enough just dealing with all the day-to-day shit and music that it's like, as long as we're, you know, internally together, then it's just so much easier to deal with the external bullshit.
All right. This whole adventure started something like 1994.
Oh, yeah.
When you decided after Dark Chapter to start a new band with Thomas Miller, could you even imagine 20 years later to be still with the same band, touring, not the same guys, but some of it?
Yes, mostly the same guys.
Yeah, touring the whole world, being Japan, in Asia, in South America, North America makes sense, Europe, and make a living with it? Was it one way or the other your purpose, or just...
I didn't even think about it. Back then, it was just, like, trying to get something going. You know, it's like, oh, man, I hope, you know, I hope we can get a record done and, you know, find some people that like what we do. I mean, I think back then, that's kind of, you're just worried about what's going to happen the next day. You know, not really thinking that far ahead. And we never really did think that far ahead. Just took everything as it came and as the band got, you know, if we started doing well here, you know, concentrating here, and then the States, we started doing well, and it's like, you know, if it happened, great. If it didn't, you know, whatever. So, but yeah, I mean, even now, it's like, you know, try not to think about it. Just try to do our job and do what we do. And, you know, it is, like I said, though, it is getting really tough.
But at that time, why did you decide not to go solo? You had the demos, the songs. Was not easier at that time to go solo? And why did you need kind of to start a band to be with other guys?
I don't know. I mean, I like, you know, songs and band. I mean, a solo record's cool, you know, and doing like guitar stuff. I mean, that's great to do. But, yeah, man, I've always been a song guy. The bands I like are all, like, you know, song bands. And, yeah, I just thought that's what I wanted to do, you know, to really kind of just be in a band. Not just, like, and there's plenty of guitar shit that I can do in the band, so, you know, it's not like I'm limited.
So you found no frustration being in a band?
No. Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, this band especially, I mean, and that's, you know, that's why it's like, okay, you know, we can have, you know, you can have a band and there's songs and there's vocals and that kind of thing, but still musically, yeah, I mean, I'm not really limited by anything, you know, I mean, or anybody in the band, you know, it's like, but I think all of us now, especially a little older, it's like, yeah, I mean, really more focused on the songs. And the presentation of the song, and the arrangement of the song, and the playing will be good in there regardless. But, yeah, man, I've been a band guy, you know. Would I do another solo album? Yeah, I'm thinking about doing one, and that'd be fun. But, yeah, band, it's just, you know, it's always just a cool thing, being a band, you know.
Good. Okay, we'd just like to finish the interview with two or three questions about your musical taste, or what you like or don't like. If it's possible to say favorite song ever.
Fuck.
Okay.
That's so hard.
I know.
I mean, that's really difficult because I like so many different things, man. I mean, if we were talking about, you know, I love film music, you know, so I would be like, yeah, the freaking Darth Vader theme is my favorite song. But if we're talking about, I don't know, rock, it could be something totally different. That's really hard, man.
But do you listen to metal stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I listen to everything.
Everything?
You know, I still listen to, like, all my old Priest and Sabbath. I still listen to all that Rush, and I listen to a lot of, like, you know, John Williams and a lot of the film stuff. I still love a lot of classical stuff. I mean, even my kids, they listen to a lot of stuff that, you know, I wasn't friggin' crazy about some of this EDM, you know, the Skrillex and this kind of stuff. But I'm like, well, you know, some of these guys, you know, they got some talent, you know, there's some, you know, Daft Punk, you know, I mean, that's fucking serious stuff, and I can listen to that, and I have respect for that stuff, so, yeah, so to say the best, you know, my favorite song of all time, holy shit, dude, that is...
Okay.
That is really hard. That really is, because I don't think I have a favorite, and it would be impossible to, you know...
The first rock album you bought?
That I bought?
Yeah.
It was Kiss, and I'm thinking, oh my god, I'm thinking it was like Rock and Roll Over or Kiss Alive. It was, man, I was probably about 10, so it was like 78 or something, so it would have to be one of those two.
I'm surprised how many artists are answering Kiss.
Yeah, I mean, because, I mean, that's, you know, you're in school, and that's, like, kind of a cool thing, and, you know, I didn't play guitar, I didn't know anything about music, and it was, like, you know, know, did you hear the new Kiss record? And it's like, oh, no, it's,
and it was also the makeup, the costume, everything.
Yeah,
was part of the thing.
You know, you're a young kid, and it's like, wow, that's cool. You know, he spits blood and, you know, shoots fire.
Right. You know? Makes sense for kids, I suppose.
Yeah, man, it was actually good. But then, yeah, but that's what got me into guitar playing eventually.
Good. You know? And the last two questions, is there a sound or a noise in your daily life you especially like?
Sound? What kind of sound?
I don't know. Can be the radio.
Is there a sound?
A bird, the sound of a bird, the water flowing, or is there something like that? Especially, for example, one of the guy who answered my question was Richard Barberi, one of the keyboard player, said he especially enjoyed, you know, the sound you have in the Charles de Gaulle Airport, you know, the little jingle before the announcement, and found that great that he makes sound of it, even a song of it, based on these few notes. Is that something like that that you especially like, or you use in your song, or?
Actually, no, I can't think of nothing like that. That's kind of crazy.
Okay, yeah. And is there a special? And so to finish, is there a sound you especially hate? An alarm clock, or screaming tires, or something? Okay, my question.
I'm trying to think if there's something I really hate or I really love, and I don't think there really is. I mean,
because I have maybe also naive that as a musician or an artist, you have a special sensitivity to the sound that's around you, but not, maybe not.
Not really anything
pops in your mind.
Not really anything that, you know. Maybe the one sound that I'm really conscious of now is dripping water. Because my studio flooded a couple of times.
Oops.
Uh-huh. So yeah, so if I'm home and I'm down there and I hear something dripping or a pipe, I'm like, what the fuck's that? I gotta go look around. And so I'm like really aware of that kind of thing. But yeah, and sounds in nature and everything, y'all take that in. And but yeah, as far as hating or loving anything,
okay.
It's just all sounds, and it all goes in here and gets processed, and maybe it does come out in music somehow, but you know, not really consciously trying to, you know, let me listen to these leaves.
You don't
whistle.
Mimic any sound you've heard? Okay?
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right.
I don't think so.
Maybe in the future. Thank you very much, Michael. Oh, it was a real pleasure.
It was good, man. Thanks, Steve.